All right, hockey fans, listen up, because we've got something special cooked up for playoff season. It's called the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge, and it's going to add some serious spice to your playoff experience. Now, here's the deal. Every playoff game, you're going to be faced with a handful of questions. It's like your own personal playoff puzzle, and it's free to join. And there are prizes, because who doesn't love winning stuff? Daily winners, you're getting hooked up with gift cards. Treat yourself to some nation gear or maybe even your favorite jersey. And for the big dogs, the people who can win an entire round, it's straight, cold, hard cash. We're talking about real dough for your hockey knowledge. So lace up those skates, stretch those thumbs, and get ready to show off your hockey IQ in the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge. Sign up today and play every game day at games.dailyfaceoff.com and prove your puck prowess.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Rinkwide Vancouver. If you thought Thursday's 3-1 win over Vegas was a complete performance from the Vancouver Canucks, that was nothing. They were just getting warmed up for the way that they dominated the Winnipeg Jets on Saturday night at Rogers Arena. 5-0, the final score, but it's a win that may come at a cost. This is Rinkwide Vancouver, Jeff Patterson. I'll be joined soon by Farhan Lalji of TSN. We're coming your way from the Rinkwide Vancouver studio in the lower lobby of the Wall Center Hotel. Centrally located in the heart of it all, sports games, theaters, restaurants, shopping, English Bay, Stanley Park, all just a short walk away. Whether you have people in town, from out of town, or whether you're considering a staycation for yourself, make sure it includes the Wall Center. Easily the best first period of the season, Farhan, I think, for the Vancouver Canucks. And from there, followed it up just positionally sound, continued to play the way Rick Tocchet wants them to play, the staples that he harps on all the time. Really, it was an impressive performance, but the storyline coming out of it is the health of Thatcher Demko.
Yeah, we got an hour here to dive into Demko and what it means and what they could have done differently and how they plan to manage him going forward. But just start with the game and that first period, you're right. I mean, and we talked about a dominant period against Ottawa earlier this season and week one against Edmonton when they were playing so poorly. And I think given the fact that this was Winnipeg and they're a good team, they're competing for the top of the Western Conference. And yeah, I know it was the second end of a back-to-back, but you know, teams have been able to kind of come out of those situations before and still play well. The Canucks were flat out awesome in the first period. All four lines were absolutely noticeable. The defense was dominant. Thatcher Demko, when he was awake, was solid. It was a really, really good period of hockey. And you've got to be impressed with how this team is playing, right? And I mean, you know, even from Demko, right? Like, remember that Teddy Bluger goal? He makes a great save, which then leads to the 2-on-1, and that's the 3-0 goal in the first period. But just a complete performance. And we've said for the most part, this team is pretty good 5-on-5, and they managed to keep these four games primarily at 5-on-5. And I think that says a lot for the success that they're having, and they're just getting better and better, and we'll kind of break it down. But so many question marks positionally we've had around this team are slowly starting to get answered. So if the goaltending thing isn't catastrophic, this is a really impressive victory, an impressive first period, and a lot to get excited about if you're a Canuck fan as we get into the final month here.
Well, season high for shots in a period in that opening 20 minutes. The Canucks got to 20 shots. Actually, they had 21 at one point, but they took one away. So officially into the books is a 20-shot first period. The Canucks with a 3-0 lead. First time they've had a 3-0 lead since a home ice win against Detroit prior to the last time the Jets were in town, and that started a four-game losing skid. Well, the Canucks have pulled out of that tailspin in a big way. Four straight wins after the road trip. They tack on this one, 5-1-1 now in their last seven hockey games. And you know, on a night when the Los Angeles Kings lose in regulation to Dallas and the Edmonton Oilers leave a point on the table in Buffalo, Vegas did defeat the Detroit Red Wings. So Vegas holds serve, but I think the win the other night against Vegas left the Golden Knights in the Canucks dust. So this is a good night where the Canucks pick up another point on the Edmonton Oilers, who look like the only team that really is within striking distance in the Pacific Division. And you know, you mentioned the fact that this is a good Winnipeg team. Like, they absolutely throttled Seattle last night. 3-0 probably didn't do it justice. And yeah, it's back-to-back, but relatively easy travel there. And the Jets were 6-0 this season in the back half of back-to-backs until this one. But the Vancouver Canucks, full credit, they opened the scoring 2 minutes and 5 seconds in. Nils Höglander serving notice that he was going to have a big night, and boy, did he ever. Höglander gets the assist. I kind of thought maybe he had scored that goal, but somewhere in the blue paint, JT Miller able to get his stick on it, his 32nd goal of the season, as the Canucks had one of those extended shifts in the Winnipeg zone. They've been so good for him this year at retrieving pucks and keeping plays alive and keeping the pressure on, and it wears down the defense. And sure enough, the Jets defenders were out there for over a minute on that shift, and Quinn Hughes dancing over on that right side, Ian Cole with a nifty little rolling pick that created a little bit of space for him to get the shot away. Höglander had a helping hand in there, and Miller gets credit for the goal. But there was just a lot to like, and I thought that sort of set the tone for what was going to follow.
That goal came at 2:05.
Yeah.
And we looked at each other and we said, 7 shots? Right? Yeah. That was their 7th shot. We're used to the Canucks scoring on their first shot, maybe their 2nd shot. This is their 7th shot in just over 2 minutes. And Mikheyev had credit for 3 of the shots during that stretch. So we couldn't believe that. And, you know, you mentioned Hughes. Like, he was dancing at the blue line. Like, he kept that puck in on a couple of different occasions and took it across the blue line, got down low. Höglander looked like he tried to go through the legs somehow. And it actually got, I think it's going in anyway, if Miller doesn't poke it in, because Miller just poked it in right before it got to the goal line. But, you know, a really good start for this team. You're right, right out of the gate.
And then Höglander himself scores his 20th goal of the season. Just an incredible accomplishment for a guy that was a healthy scratch at times, was sort of the, looked like he was going to be the extra forward coming out of training camp, started on the 4th line, certainly made some hay lower in the lineup, earned a promotion, and he really hasn't looked back since then. And, you know, down that right side, Pia Suter driving to the net, and Hoaglander's shot able to get through traffic and past Connor Hellebuyck. And that's the other thing, too, is, you know, the Canucks score 5 on Connor Hellebuyck. He went from early November through some portion of February. He didn't give up more than 3 goals in a game. Now, that streak has come to an end, but he's owned the Canucks in recent years, and for them to get 5 on Connor Hellebuyck, team in front of Hellebuyck didn't do an awful lot to help their all-star goaltender, but still one of, if not the best in the biz, and the Canucks able to pump him for 5. So, you know, things are going well when Phil DiGiuseppe all of a sudden is red hot. Phil, his scores in the back-to-back games, Elias Pettersson on the power play that's showing some signs of life, and then Pia Suter kind of against the run of the play there, Hellebuyck moving and was able to tuck it in, showed some pretty good hand-eye. So there are your goal scorers, Miller, Höglander, DiGiuseppe, Pettersson, and Suter. We'll get back to more of the way the game unfolded, but the big story coming out is the health of Thatcher Demko. Now, after the game, Rick Tocchet didn't have a whole lot to say. He said that he hadn't talked to the doctors. That's usually code for, I don't want to tell you what I know about the extent of the injury, but these are the facts as we know them. 26 minutes and 40 seconds. So 6:40 of the second period, Thatcher Demko comes out of the hockey game. There was a sequence early in the second period where he was laboring to get up out of his crouch, if you will, faced only 12 shots. So he wasn't busy in the hockey game, but people have, you know, poured over the video now trying to see if there was something, anything, a movement that you can point to and say, that's the moment. You know, the fact that he was able to leave under his own power and essentially pulled himself from the game, didn't need the training staff to come out on the ice. I don't know if that's good news. I mean, the fact that he didn't have to be, you know, carried off the ice by teammates and those, that's good news, obviously, but really hard to draw any conclusions, and the head coach wasn't giving us an awful lot after the game.
Yeah, Casey DeSmith said that Demko actually spoke to him in the previous TV timeout and said, hey, be ready. because I might have to come out. And, you know, even Quinn Hughes said after that, we hope this isn't a long-term thing. And he kind of sounded optimistic, even though he said he hadn't been told anything by anybody yet. So we'll read into that what we will. Patrick Alvin said on After Hours, I don't know if I said this earlier, that they'll know more tonight or tomorrow, which would imply that he's going to get some sort of test, maybe an MRI. Alvin didn't say that, but you know, if you're going to get those kind of updates, it's probably going to result in a test. And you know, there were some impressive saves. He, like Mason Appleton, might have been the only Winnipeg Jets player that kind of showed up in this game. And Demko robs him midway through the first period. He made a great save off Nikolai Ehlers with about 6 minutes to go in the period after a really bad play by JT Miller on the half wall. Throws the puck in the middle of the ice. Ehlers takes it. Demko makes a great save there. And then he robs Appleton just a couple of seconds before Bluger takes it the other way and sets up PDG for the 3-0 goal. So didn't necessarily have to do a lot, but made some impressive saves when they mattered. Hard to say whether any of those did it. You know, there was that one play that I think Rob Williams, Rob the hockey guy from Daily Hive, posted, and we looked at it, and it didn't look like there was an obvious moment in the play where the injury might have happened. But certainly he was slow to get up. And you talked about what happened in practice this morning during the morning skate where you noticed something as well.
It didn't look like a lot, but it also didn't look like a normal sequence where I thought he stayed down longer in his crouch at the morning skate and looked to be in a little bit of distress. And I thought maybe he had been stung by a shot. Look, if he was hurt, they weren't going to start him, even with the significance of this game. So I think, you know, I saw people saying, like, you know, if they knew something, like, why would they play him? I don't think Thatcher Demko would put himself ahead of the team in that regard. If he couldn't go, he would have said so, and they would have had to move on to the plan B, which would have been Casey DeSmith and try to get a goaltender in there, although that would have been interesting because Abbotsford was down in Henderson, Nevada, played this afternoon. So anyways, they didn't have to cross that bridge, but they may have to dip into the farm system here in the days ahead. They don't play again now till Wednesday. Whatever the case, Thatcher Demko left the hockey game. Casey DeSmith came in, faced just 3 shots over the first 25 minutes or so. So the Jets didn't do much to test him, but that's, I think, a credit to the hockey club in front of Casey DeSmith. Now, normally, we do post-game audio in the second segment of Rinkwide, but because this is a pressing topic right off the top, want to hear from Rick Tocchet, and then you're going to hear from Casey DeSmith as well. Tocchet telling us that he hadn't talked to the doctor, so he didn't really have much of an update. Later in his postgame availability, he was asked about, will the Canucks, and again, they don't know the extent of Thatcher Demko's injury, if it in fact is an injury, or maybe he'll be good to go, and maybe they dodge a bullet here, but Tocchet was asked about handling Demko the rest of the way, and if they're going to have to monitor his workload with 16 games remaining in the regular season.
Yeah, well, the schedule kind of sets up for that, and we're confident in Casey. Obviously, we'll find out what this happens. But yeah, we're going to have to really manage it. We got 3 days off. We got 2 days this week. I mean, I think we played 3 games and I don't know, you guys were 11 days or something. So there's a lot of time for him to get some rest and whatever, you know, we got to do to get him healthy again. But yeah, we're going to manage him for sure.
Well, the coach is right. The schedule absolutely helps. They don't play till Wednesday and then they don't play again until next Saturday against the Washington Capitals. And that's the luxury of a 9-game homestand that starts with this impressive 5-0 victory. Tocchet went on to say that they're confident in Casey DeSmith. We heard how much the win in Anaheim last week meant to him just to sort of get over the hurdle of not delivering victories in big numbers since the Christmas break. But the sort of the clip that you focus on there is where he says they've got to get Demko healthy again. And so that's first and foremost. Before they can worry about his workload and monitoring and all that kind of stuff, they need their horse back and back in good health.
And we've looked at this, right? And he's on pace to get over 60 games again this year, which is something that I think everybody before the season didn't think was the best for Thatcher Demko. So he's now started 14 of the last 17 games. And there have been games previous to that. And when you get a muscular injury, right? And if this happens to be a groin or a hamstring or whatever, something muscular, which we believe it is, right? At this point, some sort of strain. Those things tend to happen at the end of an overuse situation. Yeah, you could be having to go post to post and, you know, defensive structure and system could also lend itself to that. But there have been moments in this stretch. The Chicago game is the one that really jumps to mind where they could have given him an opportunity to sit and get a bit of a rest. Then he starts 5 straight games. Most recently, you know, maybe there was a Seattle game and there was something in there where you just decide that even though you're not playing back to back, that it's just the right thing to give him a night off, but they haven't. And I don't want to be here criticizing Rick Tocchet, because Rick Tocchet, in my opinion, is the coach of the year in the NHL, right? Like, he's right there in terms of what the expectations for this team were, where they're at now, how he's been able to push the right buttons. Like, Rick Tocchet's done a fantastic job. But this is an area, because here's the other thing. When Demko doesn't play, Demko doesn't rest. Ian Clark's not wired that way,
yeah.
Right? They go off to the side and they grind. Mm-hmm. At some point, and here's the other thing with Demko, like, you better be really, really sure when he's back healthy, that he's not just physically healthy, but that he's mentally healthy. Because when we look at what happened last year, and, you know, we look at the sequencing that, you know, that led to his injury, I think there are a lot of people who believe that he compensated in his technique not being fully confident in the injury, right? And that when eventually the injury became much more serious and he had to remove himself from the lineup, you know, there are people that are, you know, goalie experts that look at it and they're like, yeah, that's not how he normally plays, right? And so you don't want to get into a situation with a muscular injury where it's still in the guy's head and it creates a compensatory type of situation, which only makes it worse. So they better make sure that when he's ready, you better wait an extra couple of games and you better make sure that he's not just physically ready, but he's mentally healthy so he gets out of his own head, because he's had a history now.
You referenced Casey DeSmith, and we had a chance to talk to him after the hockey game. This is DeSmith talking a little bit about the scenario that unfolded and the fact that Demko had kind of tipped him off. And then maybe he tips his hand a little bit here at the tail end. Have a listen to Casey DeSmith after the hockey game.
Demmer mentioned something, just said, like, you know, maybe just get ready. So it was nice having a little bit of heads up just to get the mind right before going in. Take it from there.
How concerned are you? Okay.
I have no idea what's going on. Obviously, I hope for the best, and hopefully it's just like a couple day thing and he moves forward with no complications or anything.
So there you go. That was DeSmith. He was the first player waiting in his stall when the media got into that Canucks locker room after the win. Says that, yeah, Demko mentioned something. Then he said, and I thought that was curious, you hope that it's a couple of day thing and that there's no further complications. So, you know, he claimed he didn't have much knowledge or an update for us, but then says, hopefully it's just a couple of day thing. Now, this is curious too. And as we record this in the hours after the hockey game, you and I were there to the final buzzer. We were in the locker room, listening to Rick Tocchet. The Vancouver Canucks have now put out a statement through their public relations Twitter account that the next media availability for anybody around this hockey club will be on Tuesday. No Sunday, no Monday media availability. They're saying next media availability for the hockey club will be on Tuesday.
So how do you do that if you practice? Are they saying they're not practicing?
It just says next media availability will take place at Rogers Arena on Tuesday, March the 12th. Doesn't say anything about a practice schedule. I think one of the next 2 days was going to be a day off, and this may be them calling an audible and making 2 days off here so that they're able just to circle the wagons. And there is
only this organization would do that, right? Like, this organization would have it in them to say, we're going to do one less day of practice just so we can play cloak and dagger and hide all of this from the media, the general public, and everybody else. Because, you know, Rick Tocchet. Rick Tocchet wants them to practice.
He has spoken about that at length here.
And they, by league rules, are not allowed to practice and not be available. That's a league rule.
So this is going to be worth monitoring if we see or get some indication that there's a practice, but the hockey club is saying no media availability, no further update, unless they put out some sort of statement on Thatcher Demko. But certainly some intrigue here in the hours.
There's no chance this team does two full days off. Less, you know, just a month out of the All-Star break, gives them two full days off as planned. This is cloak and dagger stuff.
I would imagine that this is them trying to formulate a plan on how they're going to handle this if there is, you know, some bad news around their star goaltender and a guy that, again, he'll get the victory. They share the shutout. It will go into the books as a shared shutout. It is the 34th win of the year for Thatcher Demko, so he has 34 of their 42 wins. We know how valuable he is. Of course, last year was gone for 3 months in the middle of the season, couldn't get saves when he was out of the lineup. And, you know, the season before that ended with an injury after a heavy workload, and a lot of people connecting the dots there. So we'll see where things go. I mean, Canucks and Canuck fans certainly holding their breath and keeping their fingers crossed here that this doesn't turn out to be much. But yes, some intrigue added by the organization. This isn't media speculation. This is the organization sort of going into lockdown mode here for the next couple of days.
And we do believe that they are having the 2 days off. And Patrick Johnson's reporting as much that while they've kind of carefully worded it in terms of next availability without saying on their site that they're off, we do believe that they are off for both days and they won't be hidden practices. We're not suggesting that.
Who needs practice when you've won four in a row and
right?
five of your last seven and riding high at 42-17-7 now on the season, 91 points. It is their 21st home ice victory to go along with, 21 road victories as well. So some real balance there for the Vancouver Canucks, whether they're at home, whether they're on the road. But they are at home for the balance of the month of March. This is the first of nine straight at Rogers Arena, and what a way to kick off the homestand with a 5-0 win over the Winnipeg Jets. Colorado was in on Wednesday. Washington comes through a week from now. Buffalo, Montreal, Calgary, and on it goes. And interesting note, too, I mean, yes, the Jets played in Seattle on Friday night before they faced the Canucks on Saturday. Colorado will be in Calgary on Tuesday before they face the Vancouver Canucks on Wednesday. And as this homestand unfolds, three of the first four opponents, including Buffalo, and four of the nine, Anaheim at the tail end, and that's a Sunday afternoon game. They play a Saturday afternoon game in Edmonton. So four of the nine teams coming through will be playing their second of back-to-back. And, you know, the Canucks have been looking at this for a while and saying, hey, at some point the schedule slows down. The schedule has to work in our favor. And certainly it would feel like the balance of the month of March here, the schedule is absolutely working for them, but they were working for themselves in this one, full value for a 5-0 win over the Winnipeg Jets. I want to get to Quinn Hughes and his performance, the fact that they were able to roll four lines. That was one of the things that Rick Tocchet thought to really work in his club's favor in this hockey game. But I know you asked Quinn Hughes after the game about his performance since the All-Star break, because for the first 2 weeks out of the All-Star break, he didn't look nearly as dynamic as he had through the first 50 or so games of this season. But Farhan, the captain, is back in a big way, scored the other night, gets onto the score sheet a couple of times here, two more assists, matches his career high with 76 points and counting with 16 games to go. So he's going to get to 80. He'll probably get to 90. And hey, if this power play continues to heat up, maybe he makes a late push for a 100-point season. I think it's going to be hard for him to get to triple digits, but when he's on and walking the line and creating space for himself and getting those shots through, I mean, this last week, he has looked like the front runner for the Norris Trophy.
Yeah, there's no doubt. I mean, that, you know, I asked him specifically without trying to pump his tires too much, that I just said to him, I said, look, you look like you're dancing again, right?
Yep.
And he was. And we talked about it on the first goal of the game and just throughout. The way he's played really on the road trip as well, you could just see him getting better and better and more confident. Rick Tocchet was wise to kind of give him the last 4 minutes of tonight's game off. You know, you just parked there at the end of the bench kind of hanging out. But when he is on, like, he is just flat out on. And we've talked about the number of players that have come out of the All-Star break slowly. And really all of their star players, JT Miller, I think we agree on this, that JT Miller has been JT Miller since the All-Star break.
Yep.
But Brock Besser had a bit of a slowdown. Elias Lindholm had the first game that he scored the two goals, and it's kind of been slow. Elias Pettersson, to this point, I know he got 2 points and really should have had three. I think both he and Hoglander should have gotten assists on the Pew Suter goal late in the game. I also think Demko should have got an assist on the DiGiuseppe goal. In spite of all of that, I still watch Pettersson play, and I think he's flashing. I don't think he's hurt. I don't think he's playing poorly. I don't think he's laboring. There's none of that. I do think he's better than he was during that post-All-Star two-week slump that a number of them had. But he's not taking over. Quinn Hughes is taking over. Like, Quinn Hughes is flat-out incredible right now. Again, the points don't do him justice, just the way he's controlling games. And, you know, but like I said, with Pettersson on the other hand, he's been fine. He's been okay, but he's flat. I just find him as flashing. I don't find him as a guy that's playing dominant shift after dominant shift. What I do like is I think the power play has found something, right? I really liked what I've seen from them just in this game, 5-on-4, because 5-on-3 and 4-on-3 don't count in my world in terms of how your power play's got to operate all the time. They looked great today, and he was part of that. And hopefully the momentum from the power play will eventually take over for him at 5-on-5 because talked about that, about how he felt the lack of anything going on in the power play was taking away from Pedersen's five-on-five play. So hopefully that worm turns. So again, I think he's been fine, but he hasn't elevated the way Hughes has.
Well, I thought it was interesting with the matchup game, and they so clearly wanted to get JT Miller and Quinn Hughes and Hronek. So Miller and his line and that defensive pair out against Mark Scheifele, and they absolutely stifled Scheifele and his line, and really kept the Jets in check. But the Canucks, that's the beauty of home ice advantage, the matchup game, the line matching. And just try this on for size. When we talk about Quinn Hughes and dancing, like, he's had so many periods and stretches within games where you just marvel. Farhan, in the first period tonight, the shot attempts with Quinn Hughes on the ice, and the entire period was played at even strength, the shot attempts were 20 to nothing for the Vancouver Canucks. The shots on goal were 15-0 in favor of the Vancouver Canucks on the night. The shots were 21-5 with Quinn Hughes out there. So just absolute domination, tilting the ice. That's what he does when he's on his game. And I'm not sure he's had a better period this season, or maybe in the National Hockey League. Like, those numbers do not lie. You're going to hear from Rick Tocchet on the fourth line and the fact that it does free him up to roll his line. So we'll get to the coach again momentarily. You're going to hear from Quinn Hughes on his performance too. But just a thought on, and not so much even the goals. Like, DiGiuseppe scoring, that's great. He had three coming into the game in Vegas. He scored it back-to-back. He's up to five. And it's a big goal. At 2-0, the Jets are still in it. And with Connor Hellebuck, you never know. When they extended to 3-0, though, that kind of felt like a dagger in a Jets team that had played last night. But I do think Sam Lafferty's had a bit of an awakening here in the last week or so. His speed's been noticeable. You know, again, it's not a fourth line that is built to absolutely drill opponents into the fifth row. But I do think that they can't back down. They've got to finish checks when they got an opportunity. And I thought that was a part of this first period as well. I think last time when Adam Lowry absolutely demolished Nils Amon, and then DiGiuseppe, you know, credit to him, he stepped in there, stepped up a weight class or two and took a couple, but showed that, you know, you just can't do that to a teammate. Nikita Zadorov was doing what you want from Nikita Zadorov right from the start of this hockey game. He's a big body. He knows his role. I thought he was physical. You know, there were a couple of skirmishes with Adam Lowry, and Adam Lowry could play on my team all day, every day. Like, I've just, the things that he brings to that Winnipeg hockey club, and he wears the C for a reason, but I've always liked the way that he plays, and he's a mean piece of business, but I thought Zadorov certainly held his own, pushed back. That's what the Canucks need. But the fact that their fourth line is not getting pinned, able to spend shifts in the offensive zone, wear down defenses, and I like the fact that, you know, this is four straight games now where the Canucks have taken one penalty, and the Garland penalty the other night in Vegas was garbage, and the referee just saw a guy go down and a stick in the vicinity. So really, the last two penalties against the Canucks, not really warranted, but they're showing discipline. So good on them, and I'm sure that makes the coach happy. But what about the fact that without, you know, when they're not taking these penalties, you're not leaning on your penalty killers, they don't have to play those hard minutes, and Tocchet has been able over the last week, and the proof's in the pudding with four straight wins, to roll his lines and get everybody involved in the hockey game.
Yeah, and I asked him specifically about the fourth line after the game, and I've noticed them for the last three games as well. I think that they're really starting to find that identity. He talked about that early on, that we need them to find an identity, and they're doing that. And we raved about the third line of this team,
yep,
you know, for months, really. And Dakota Joshua's due back in, you know, probably just over a week to 10 days, somewhere in here. And, you know, that's going to bolster that third line as well. And the third line was fine tonight too. But that fourth line, you know, Bluger's a guy that tonight you're going to talk about him setting up Phil DiGiuseppe on the goal. And let's not forget that goal happens because Thatcher Demko makes a great save, right? But the 3-0 goal, you're right, puts the game away. But there were, in that first period, there was a fantastic back check he made to take the puck away from Mason Appleton, who would have been clear if Bluger doesn't come back and make that play. And then later on, before their goal, like in that sequence, because it started with a Zadorov turnover, and they got about 30 seconds where they're hemmed in their own end, and there's a cross-ice pass, and he just gets a piece of it. And if he doesn't get a piece of it, Demko's trying to go post to post, and it's probably still half an open net for a goal there. But just that little stick by Teddy Bluger takes away a big-time high-danger scoring chance. So He's doing it at both ends of the ice. See, this is a guy that played as the third line center when they were going so well. So he's comfortable in a bigger role. And if you give him more ice time, I think he's going to thrive in it. So talk it straight. Like, let him roll. If you're not sitting there hemmed in, taking killing penalties all the time, you can let that group get a little bit comfortable. And Lafferty's using his speed again a little bit. So, you know, so I like what they're doing. And DiGiuseppe's a guy that can that has shown, like, look, if he's a second-line player for you, you're not a really good team. He's a legitimate NHL player. He doesn't have to be your 13th or 14th forward. He can play on a nightly basis and still be effective, and he's showing that when he gets a regular shift and he gets comfortable. So, yeah, I like what that fourth line's doing. And we had talked about going into the trade deadline about how that should be maybe something they should look at as a plan B or C if they can't address the top six. You know, figure out an extra piece you can get down there, and it never worked, but they're doing fine now.
Yeah, they were a big part of a 5-0 Vancouver Canuck victory, a complete effort, start to finish, as this team knocks off the Winnipeg Jets for a fourth straight win. Jeff and Farhan with you. It is Rinkwide Vancouver. Canucks 5-0 winners over the Winnipeg Jets, but a city waits with bated breath to get any sort of update on Thatcher Demko. But as we said in that opening block, that may be a couple of days before we get any sort of notification on the health of the Canucks star goaltender. So that's the storyline. Obviously, we're following, but the fact that this team has regained its form, found that structure that Rick Tocchet always talks about, and let's get into it. You heard from Tocchet talking about his goaltending, but want to get to the coach and his postgame remarks on a couple of other things here. Farhan, our postgame audio, a presentation of Mr. Lube, 100% Canadian, pioneers of the no appointment oil change, and now providing tire service and sales. No appointment needed for that either. 16 locations in the Lower Mainland for one near you. Go to MrLube.com. Well, you mentioned Rick Tocchet and the fourth line. In fact, you asked him the question about the performance of those guys. And I was one that was banging the drum ahead of the trade deadline. I thought that that was an area that they might have to bulk up a little bit. Brandon Nyheim was a name that was out there. He got traded. He goes to Colorado. He'll be here on Wednesday for the next game, but he'll be on the other side. There were some other pieces, low-cost pieces, that moved ahead of the trade deadline. You know, Pat Maroon wasn't a guy that I thought they needed, but he was another name that obviously the Boston Bruins had some interest in, and so they went out and got him. The Canucks stamp pad, as you know by now, and so they're moving forward with a fourth line that is starting to find an identity, and obviously the head coach pleased about that.
I think to win this league, you have to have a good fourth line, and I think they've played well these last four games. It also coincides we're not taking penalties, so they get out there a little bit more. You know, it's so when you take penalties, some guys sit the bench for a while, so it looks like there's more flow. It's easier for me to coach when it's flow like this. You can use the bench. So Deej getting a couple goals here, last couple of games. You know, Laff's been with his speed, and Teddy's really good on in his own end.
So there you go. Rick Tocchet talking about all those things, that when a fourth line is going and the fact that they've been disciplined, get everybody involved in the hockey game. And I think you saw that right from the start. In fact, and I don't think this is a surprise, you know, this fourth line as it's currently constructed has shown some signs of life. Look who Rick Tocchet is starting in these hockey games. And in fact, it started in Los Angeles. Mm-hmm. They won that hockey game, so he came back. He gave those guys the nod in Vegas the other night. And not that they're out there setting the tone necessarily, but I do think that that's not a coincidence that they're on a win streak and Tocchet's not going to change that. And so first game back home, and sure enough, there's that fourth line getting the starting assignment for the Vancouver Canucks.
Yeah, and you know, when the third line was humming, when Joshua was healthy, he used to start them on a regular basis, right? So whether it's to set the tone or whether it's to just reward them or whether it's just superstition and playing the same group over and over, he's clearly showing a level of confidence. So my question to you, young Mr. Patterson, and maybe injuries will determine the answer for us anyway, but when Joshua comes back, is the simple answer to just scratch Pod Colson? Or is there, because McCabe's playing well now too.
I know.
And we should talk about him, right?
We will. Joshua's going to go back on his line with Garland, and I think Lindholm will get an opportunity there. And then this fourth line, like, there is some internal pressure now to continue to perform because, again, I thought Pod Colson was okay. Didn't play a lot in the second period, which is interesting. There wasn't penalties, really, in that second period. I mean, the Canucks had a couple of power plays, but it wasn't a penalty-filled second period that cut in to the ice time of a lot of players. But Pod Colson went quite a stretch over the second half of that second period without playing. But he had a chance in the first period in the slot.
I know he dished it.
And I don't need to see Connor Garland winding up for a 40-foot slap shot. Pods, be a little selfish. And I mean that in a good way. Like, unleash the cannon. Let's see. Like, you know, get in on that scoring fun. Guys were beating Connor Hellebuck. So, yeah, I was a little disappointed that Pod Colson didn't shoot the puck there. But, yeah, I thought he was okay in this game. What did they have him at final ice time? 11 minutes and 41 seconds. Three shots on goal and five hits. So, found his way onto the stat sheet at the very least. And I just think that it's going to come with confidence. I had a chance to talk to him after the morning skate, and he admitted that he knew his name had been floated out there and that the last week had been difficult for him. He had been called back to the NHL. That part was good, but, you know, was it a showcase? He wasn't sure. Anyways, he gets through the trade deadline. He's here now, four straight games, and they're winning, and I would think you're going to stick with the same lineup. And it's not just four straight wins. The Anaheim one, you know, they had to have that one, and they got it. And then Los Angeles, Vegas, Winnipeg. I mean, that's a bit of a gauntlet.
Yeah.
And it's funny because even a week ago, we had people in our inbox, in our social channels saying, and we've heard this pretty much all year, like, but who have they beaten? You know, where's their signature win? Well, I would suggest that after knocking off the LA Kings, the Vegas Golden Knights, and the Winnipeg Jets in succession, you have to be able to find a signature win in there somewhere. And so I asked Rick Tocchet after the game if he thought that these wins and the way that they've gone about their business, you know, have they made a statement?
I don't know if it's a statement. I just think we believe in it. You know, we talk about the outside noise. You know, you got to believe in yourself. Yeah, we were a little bit pissed at our play, but it wasn't that bad too. I mean, we had a really good game against Boston. We gave the one in Pittsburgh away. I don't think it was that bad, but it's a grueling month. After the All-Star break, it was, you could tell the miles, it was wearing on guys. I think this week, the rest we got playing the style that we had to get back to, the 2-1 games, the 3-1 game, those are, you know, and playing meaningful games in March are huge for this organization. This is big, you know, for Potsy and those guys, but also other guys, Petey, you know, Huggy, those guys, these are big games, and they're delivering for us.
All right, the coach wasn't sure. You heard him right off the top there. He wasn't sure that there was a statement necessarily, but getting back to the way that they have played. And a couple of things here. First of all, I'll ask you, do you think they've made any sort of statement to themselves or to the teams around them in the Pacific and the West with this past week?
I think they have to. They have to have. And you can't deny that because there have been people waiting for them to slip big time. And when they go 1-5-1 in a 7-game stretch, and that's their worst stretch of the season, they had to be thinking about it internally, right? Like, I mean, they didn't like their performances. And in some of the cases, the performances weren't bad. They just weren't getting the results, but they didn't like what was happening. They wanted to put an end to it quick, and they haven't just put an end to it. They put an end to it emphatically with four straight wins. So whether or not it's a statement to anybody else, because, you know, Edmonton was on a bit of a roll and they've got all those games in hand and people are starting to think about, oh, they better start looking over their shoulder after these 7 games. I think that's a bit of a statement to the people around them in the league, or at least in the conference. It's going to be pretty tough now for Edmonton after their last 2 games and the Canucks' last 2 games for them to make up all that remaining ground. The Canucks are doing their part. By the time they play again, Edmonton will have gained one more game in hand on them. But I think they've got to be pleased with how they've come out of this.
Canucks extend their lead over Edmonton to 12 points. The Oilers have 4 games in hand. They'll play Pittsburgh on Sunday. And it's back-to-back for the Oilers, who lost in a shootout in Buffalo. Pittsburgh, bottom has fallen out for them. They got smoked by Boston. But it's back-to-back for both of those teams. So 3-4 for the Oilers, and we'll see what happens there. But a 12-point cushion for the Vancouver Canucks over their nearest competitor in the Pacific Division, and that's with 16 games remaining. The other part of the equation here is, and Irf and I talked about this on the last post-game pod, this is going to lead into hearing from Quinn Hughes in a moment. And we touched on the fact that, you know, coming out of the All-Star break, he had played a lot of hockey. A lot of nights had carried this hockey club. Wasn't at his best for sort of a 2-week stretch there. And, you know, the results showed with the hockey club. But they also came out of the All-Star break, played 8 of 10 on the road. Those 10 games were played in a 17-night stretch. I was down in Seattle for the final game of that run, and they were abysmal. You look at this stretch now, 5-1-1 in their last 7 games, no back-to-backs. All in the same time zone. Easy travel down the California coast, and now you're home for 9 in a row. It is a lot to ask over the course of an 82-game season. There's going to be some stretches of the schedule that just don't allow you to perform at your very best. But I think you're seeing now, with some rest, with days off, with practice days, that Rick Tocchet is able to get the best out of his hockey club. And Quinn Hughes is the leader. He's the captain. And he is a spark plug on so many nights. This was his response to your question after the game about the way that he's playing and the way that he is. He looks like he's dancing out there.
You know, I'm a pretty competitive person. You expect a lot out of yourself every game, but sometimes it's not like that. But, you know, last couple games, I feel like I got my energy. And, you know, we haven't been playing as much hockey. We've had a couple days here and there to rest. And, you know, I feel good. And I think, you know, a lot of guys feel good right now.
There you go. Quinn Hughes. When he's leading, the rest of the guys just seem to fall into place. And a two-assist night for him. So, ho-hum. Just two more points. 76 on the season. Matches his career best and his total from a year ago. And really, it does sort of feel like the sky is the limit. And a waiting word on Thatcher Demko. It's not going to come by the end of this podcast. But the Demko news aside, honestly, I think the best news for the Vancouver Canucks is that Quinn Hughes seems to be back.
Yeah, he is. You know, and when he's on his game, I mean, we saw the metrics early in the season that when he was on the ice was just completely tilted. Right? I mean, it's not about how well you play defense when you've never got to defend. It's so fun to watch. You know, you and I have done this for a long time. It's hard to get overly enamored, but we've never seen a defenseman like this with the Canucks, ever.
No.
You know, in my 27 years, or your 20, like, we have never seen a defenseman like this. And it is so much fun to watch when he is on. And then here's the other subtlety along with that. And I don't want to minimize Hughes by getting off the topic because he's been so good. And now the power play is getting better with him controlling things at the blue line. But Carson Soucy's playing really well. And Carson Soucy now can anchor that second pair. And Ian Cole has kind of been just okay. If you ask me what happens when Tyler Myers comes back in terms of who might need to get load managed, Ian Cole probably becomes the guy at the top of my list. And he's a great guy. And we want him to do well. And he's going to be so important for this team in the playoffs. But Carson Soucy has stepped in and has played his best hockey. And not that he was poor before, but he has played his best hockey since his second extended injury right now.
I would agree with you. And it's funny because week to week, I kind of go from candidate to candidate about unsung hero for this group. You know, Hoglander getting to 20 goals. I mean, we've talked about him an awful lot. I don't know if he's unsung anymore in this market, but early in the season, Casey DeSmith, the way that he was playing and winning for the Vancouver Canucks, and a guy like Sam Lafferty, who, you know, arrived on the scene and was able to produce in different roles, and Pia Suter's quietly gone about it. I mean, there are a bunch of guys, but Carson Soucy, when he's in the lineup, there's a stabilizing force there without a doubt. I mean, the record with him in the lineup is undeniable, and all they do is win. And certainly since he got back in the lineup against Los Angeles the other night, they have been on this, I mean, three straight since he got back, but four straight victories now for the Vancouver Canucks. Again, a reminder that the post-game audio here on Rinkwide Vancouver is a presentation of our friends at Mr. Lube. All right, let's get to the Rinkwide Vancouver three stars. A little bit of curious choice in the building. The three stars selected by Hockey Night in Canada. Elias Pettersson, you talked about him. Some flashes, but first star? Not on Rinkwide. We'll get to our own selections here in a sec, but Pettersson, Hoglander, Hughes, the three stars as selected by the broadcast crew tonight.
Yeah, I mean, look, and when you play a game like this, there's a lot of candidates out there. And for us to say that we didn't think Petey was our first star doesn't mean we think Petey played poorly. But
nope.
Quinn Hughes was clearly the first star. And, you know, both those players get graded on a curve, right? Like it or not. So when Quinn Hughes is at the top on his curve, that means he had a pretty good night. I don't mind Hoglander as a number two star. I don't know if that's who you've got. I think there's some other candidates for a potential number three, for sure.
Well, yeah, I've got Hughes as the first star, no doubt. Again, we talked about maybe his most dominant first period of the season. Hoglander with a goal and an assist on the first two goals, up to 20 on the season, so a great milestone for him. I don't know if this is a surprise, but I'm going with Thatcher Demko, who only played 26 minutes, but I thought the two saves on Mason Appleton, one at 1-0 and the other at 2-0, then it quickly became 3-0. Like, those were pivotal saves
yeah.
that they had to have. He knows the storyline coming in that Connor Hellebuck may only give up one or two, and he had to, you know, match the performance. Didn't happen 3 weeks ago when the Jets came to town here. And not that the goals were on Thatcher Demko, but he was the second best goaltender on the ice. So he didn't finish this hockey game, but in his 26 minutes, he doesn't give up a goal and made some really big saves. The two best, I thought, came off Mason Appleton, and the second one, great transition for the Vancouver Canucks. So I've got Demko as the third star, Hughes, Hoglander, and Demko my three stars.
Yeah, I wouldn't argue with that. I might give Teddy Bluger an honorable mention, and again, grading on a curve for the third star. And just, you know, only, and I say that only because Demko didn't get to the halfway mark. Here's a question for you. Because Demko is competitive, and you mentioned it, that he knew Connor Hellebuck was at the other end, and some people viewed this as a Vezina showdown. If this is a close game, does he try to hang in a little longer?
Oof.
The fact that it was 4-0, even though you don't want to leave a game during a shutout, it's, you know, you can step out in that moment.
For sure. Open the door to him making that decision if it's a one-all tie in the second period. Again, not knowing the extent of whatever it is that was ailing him, but clearly he felt that it was best for him to come out of the hockey game, but I do think that a 4-0 lead at that point and the fact that the Jets just didn't have any juice. Made the great save off Scheifele, too, on the breakaway at 3-0 early in the second period. You know, if the Jets score there, maybe that gives them a little bit of life. So Thatcher Demko, in his brief time, didn't play half the game, but certainly made some grade A saves. All right, still to come here. We've got our stat that stands out. We'll get a little listener feedback, and we certainly will look ahead to what's to come for the Vancouver Canucks. Not going to hear from the Vancouver Canucks for a couple of days as they go underground, 2 days off from practice. As much as Rick Tocchet has talked about wanting to get to this so that he can get practice time in, things have changed. Things change in a hurry at the National Hockey League level. 5-0, the Vancouver Canucks defeat the Winnipeg Jets. This is Rinkwide Vancouver. Vancouver Canucks put on a performance at Rogers Arena, knocking off the Winnipeg Jets by a score of 5-0. So the season series is even, one win apiece, and they will meet again in Winnipeg. Only trip to Winnipeg for the Canucks, and it's game 82, the final game of the regular season. And we'll see if there are stakes there, if there are any sort of playoff implications. The Jets are in a battle with Dallas and Colorado for top spot in the Central. That one could go right down to the wire. We'll see what it all means, but that's the third and final time that these teams will meet. Game 82 on April 18th in Winnipeg.
And the Jets will be some fired up, because if you heard Rick Bowness's comments after this game, the bottom line is that's the worst game we've played in my 2 years here by far, because we didn't have one play a good game, not one. It starts there and it ends there. And his press conference lasted 90 seconds today. So, yeah.
Says a lot without saying too much. And we know he's an easygoing, mild-mannered guy for the most part, but he's a competitor. You don't last in this game as long as he has. That's pretty strong words from Bones. Then in his 2 years there, the worst game he has seen his hockey club play, because he had high praise for the way that they played and won in Seattle 24 hours earlier. All right, stat that stands out. We always do that here on Rinkwide, and I think it's a pretty simple one. The fact that the Canucks needed two goaltenders in this hockey game. It's the second time it's happened. Opening night against the Edmonton Oilers, when Thatcher Demko was dealing with a little dehydration. And again, they had a big lead, and they were able to, they had the luxury of taking him out. And Casey DeSmith made his Canucks debut that night. And then here again, 26 minutes for Thatcher Demko and 34 minutes of ice time for Casey DeSmith. But a shared shutout between the two.
Third shared shutout in Canuck history for the two of them. December 6, 2011, 6-0 win over Colorado, and February 2nd, 2015, a 4-0 win at the New York Islanders. So it's been a minute.
Has been a while, yeah. 2015, Ryan Miller and Eddie Lack, I think, and then 2011, I guess, was Luongo and
Schneider. Yeah.
Okay, there you go. Digging into the history books. I like it. All right, let's get into our listener feedback. Lots of it, and it's picking up by the game. 16 games to go before the real fun begins, and that, of course, is the Stanley Cup playoffs. Canucks getting closer with every victory to putting that X beside their name, and then they've got their eyes, obviously, on wrapping up the Pacific Division as well. Seattle Chef says, I think the passing was as crisp and precise as it's been all season. Lots of quick one-touch passes. I loved the breakout that led to that Hoglander 2-0 goal. It started deep in their own zone. Pettersson to Suter, Hoglander down the right side, obviously, and then it was just Suter driving to the net. There's just a cool sequence the way they transitioned from their own end, and it was. It started with a couple of quick, short little passes, but pass them around the Winnipeg Jets, and off they went to the races. Graham says the team was suffocating the Jets all night, played strong, showed they're ready for the playoffs. Really happy with the effort these past four games. And then he says, Susie is amazing. You know, that's not a word that I would have prior to the season associated with Carson Soucy, but as we said, I mean, the results are undeniable. He's making them a better hockey club without a doubt. Ernie says, no passengers tonight. And nice to see a bit of chemistry with Lindholm, Garland, and Pods. Again, Lindholm, he's not blowing you away with his performance, but the 200-foot thing, it's there. I mean, he only plays 14 and a half minutes, but 9-3 in the faceoff circle. Like, that has
been, happens nightly.
Yeah. No, he has been lights out, maybe better than expected coming over as a, you know, they needed a right-hand shot. They did. They don't have any right-hand centers, and he has stepped in, and it takes the pressure off guys like Pettersson and Miller and those situational faceoffs late in games. Didn't need to protect the lead in the third period, but there will come times down the stretch and into the playoffs where that is a valuable commodity.
And if you get Dakota Joshua on that line with him and Garland, he's going to find a way to get some points. And the other guy that we talked about briefly at the start of the show is Ilya Mikheyev.
Yep.
Right? Like, this guy is playing well. Like, he was a ghost for game after game after game in this 33-game goalless drought. But the last three games, we've noticed him, and you can tell, and even Talkett admitted it afterwards, that a number of guys are trying to
get a feel-good moment.
They were totally trying to set him up tonight. So, you know, good on them. It matters to them. And in a game like this that's one-sided, you can afford to do that. But he is close. And when it comes, you could see that he's added a step back, because we knew the one thing that he had was speed. And we knew it was going to take a while for him to get all that speed back. And I'll constantly say they made a mistake last year by not getting him out of the lineup earlier. Shouldn't have waited until January. But now he's starting to find his speed. Is it at 100%? No, but it feels like 95 now, where it looked like 80 before.
I just think he's digging in. It's fair to ask, like, what are you doing around here? What's your job description? But he's digging in and led the team in shots with 6. Now, the shot itself still is an issue. I'm not sure that he's going to beat many NHL goaltenders the way that he's shooting the puck. Clearly not confident. But, yeah, I mean, he's been effective. Now, the bar's low, but it has been back-to-back games at least, or maybe even 3, that he has been noticeable, and that's certainly more than we've said about him on a lot of nights for a long, long stretch here. Hockey Rules says the best player showed up and played. Bottom two lines were forechecking all night. Defense stood up well, and the goalie shut the door. 100% effort from everybody. Yeah, I mean, this is a total team effort, and we've seen that now for a handful of games. Ryan says Canucks took away time and space, came away with the puck almost every time. Rick Tocchet mentioned that postgame as well, that he thought his team did a really nice job on the forecheck, just cutting off the Jets and turning pucks over and then winning those battles when there were loose pucks along the wall. And
one's better at it than Hoglander, too.
They're going to have to keep on doing that. We'll leave the last word here from listener feedback to Andy, who just says, Demko injury, nothing else matters. Look, the win does matter because it was against a good opponent, and it continues what they did on the road trip. But there is no question that coming out of this game, storyline number one for the Vancouver Canucks is the health and well-being of Thatcher Demko, and we'll have to wait probably a couple of days to see if we get any update there. Now, this is where the schedule does afford them this opportunity to call off the dogs. They can call an audible. They can give them 2 days off. It's rare to see in season, but they don't play again until Wednesday, and after that, they don't play again until Saturday. So one game over the next week, I mean,
well, look at the opponents too, right? I mean, you're going to play Colorado Wednesday, which is going to be tough. Mm-hmm. 3 days in between, you play Washington, currently out of the playoffs. Buffalo, 2 spots behind them in 12th in the East, currently out of the playoffs. Again, 3 days later. 2 days after that, the Canadiens. 2 days after that, the Flames. So, they've played some tough games coming out. And look, you don't want to stub your toe against one of these opponents. And maybe you don't get up for it as much, which you don't want to deal with as well. But in terms of quality of opponents, that's also taken a bit of a step back.
No doubt, when you look at teams like Buffalo and Montreal and Calgary after the trade deadline, you know, they are lesser teams now. Doesn't mean that they can't rise to the occasion on a given night. And as you said, the Canucks can't afford to look past teams. But, you know, this homestand continues. It ends with Anaheim at the tail end. Now, that's 3 weeks from now, so they won't worry about the Ducks. But, you know, Colorado is going to be a handful, no doubt. They loaded up. They look like they mean business, and that's going to be a handful. But, again, helped by the schedule. We'll see how Colorado handles its goaltending. They may elect to save Georgiev for the back end of their back-to-backs, but they're in Calgary on Tuesday, they're here on Wednesday, and the Canucks should be rested. It's just a question of who's going to be between the pipes for them, and like, we have to wait and see what the update is ultimately, but if Casey DeSmith is called on to get a run of games here, you know, there is pressure on him.
But the schedule's good.
It is.
Right? It'll help him a little bit.
Yep.
And, you know, I know Silovs hasn't been great in Abbotsford, but if you can get him in here for one of those, might be good for him too.
Maybe. We'll see as the plot thickens here around Canucks goaltending. Hasn't been a lot of drama. This has been a healthy bunch, and certainly the stars on the Vancouver Canucks have remained healthy all season long, but yes, we wait with bated breath for any sort of update, and obviously we'll all be following on our social channels here between now and whenever we get an update from the Vancouver Canucks. But nice performance from the hockey club on home ice to kick off a 9-game homestand, a 5-0 win over the Winnipeg Jets, Miller, Hoglander, DiGiuseppe, Pettersson, and Suter, the goal scorers, and a shared shutout between Demko and Casey DeSmith. For Farhan, this is Jeff. Again, thanks so much for listening. We'll do this all again on Wednesday after the Colorado Avalanche come to town. You've been listening to another edition of Rinkwide Vancouver.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers. With rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's Stamps.com. Code PROGRAM.